Good morning, everyone. First of all, you have the chance today of hearing a double dose of me. For those who are interested, at 7:30 tonight, I'll be teaching on Rav Kook and Rav Zonenfeld, who not many people, most people have heard of Rav Kook. Many people have heard of Rav Zonenfeld, but don't know a lot about him. So you will tonight. You'll probably know more about him than you ever wanted to know. And all in an hour and change, hopefully. And it should be very interesting. So again, that's at 7:30 tonight. Okay, so what we're going to do today is the 11th chapter, chapter Yud Aleph of Sefer Malachim Aleph. And as I was telling Mrs. Small just a few minutes ago, if up until now we've been going on a upward trajectory, now this week we come crashing down. And it's really a stark contrast compared to everything we've been seeing up until this point. And all the euphoria, all of the excitement, all of the buildup really comes to an end. And this week we see really the tragic fall of Shlomo HaMelech, even before Shakespeare and his tragedies. So we have a tragedy here. And it begins really with Pasuk Aleph in Perek Yud Aleph. So what we're going to do is, as always, we're going to read through. And as we read through, we'll point out some things along the way and hopefully gain a greater appreciation for what exactly is taking place in our chapter, more so than even what we had. You don't need to get far. Ve'amelech Shlomo ahav nashim nachriyo rabot. So Shlomo loved non-Jewish women, ve'es bas paro, and the daughter of paro, Moaviot, Amaniot, Adomiot, Seidinot, Chitiot. Okay, all right, again, I'm not commenting on the attractiveness of the Jewish girls, but clearly he loved these non-Jewish women. Now, already you should know that language. Ve'amelech Shlomo ahav nashim nachriot. Right? Because we had, at the beginning of the third chapter, a very similar language. Vayahav Shlomo. Shlomo loved. Anyone remember what the next two words were? Perek Gimel. Vayahav Shlomo et Adonai. So in Perek Gimel, you begin with Shlomo loves Hashem. And that's really what we've been seeing up until this point. We know Shlomo is a devoted servant of Hashem. The whole, remember, the dedication of the Beis HaMikdash was a very passionate tefillah to Hashem, that he should hear the Jewish people's prayers, that his divine providence should rest in the Beis HaMikdash. So up until this point, Shlomo's been loving Hashem. And all of a sudden, that exact same phraseology, and whenever you see similar phraseology in the text of Tanakh, it's more often than not is to draw comparisons to other areas. So Ve'amelech Shlomo Ahavet Nashim is to really pull us full circle from where we begin. Okay? Now, yeah.
Doesn't Shlomo have advisors when they see this is happening? Somebody is...
So why didn't anyone stop him?
Yeah.
Why? Good question. Okay, yeah.
What I believe is the early chapters we learned of all the alliance, all the different countries that helped him with his construction
right.
of his own house.
Right.
So because of that, he had this connection with them and they influenced him.
So clearly, everyone's bothered by the question that everyone's bothered by, which is, how did this happen? How does Shlomo HaMelech, the author of Mishlei, the author of so many of our wonderful texts, one of the great rabbis, one of the great figures of Jewish history, David HaMelech's son, the person who was worthy of building the Beis HaMikdash, how does this happen? So, yeah. Okay, so the holier a person is, the harsher his Yetzer is. So Sari's suggesting that Shlomo HaMelech is a human being. He's just like any of us. Right? In the same way we have, or he's better than us, and that makes him even more susceptible to making mistakes. So there are three basic approaches to how you describe what exactly happened. And before I even get to them, I want to read a couple more psukim. Mina goyim asher amara nail b'nei Yisrael lo savo bahem, v'him lo yaviu bachem, achein yatu es levavchem acharei Elohim, bahem davak Shlomo lava. So specifically, the nations that Hashem always told us never to get too close to, because they're going to draw us after them. specifically those nations are the ones that Shlomo HaMelech is drawn towards. Okay? Vayhilo nashim sarot shva meot uplagshim shlosh meot. Whoa, right? He had 700 wives and 300 concubines. Vayatu nashav et libo. And they drew his heart. They took him off the correct path. Vayhi le'etzik not Shlomo. And as, now again, you got to follow the chronology of here. So Shlomo loves them, and he has a lot of them. So far, has he done anything wrong? So far, so good, right? I'm saying, it's not, I can barely handle one. I'm not, you know, but so far he's done nothing wrong. And then you get to Pasuk Dalet. Vayhi le'etzik not Shlomo. So now it tells us that he's old. Nashav hi tuas levavo acharei Elohim acherim. So they drew his heart after foreign gods. Velo haya levavo shalem im Adonai Elohav kilvav David aviv. And his heart wasn't with Hashem the same way David's heart was with Hashem. Vayelech Shlomo acharei ashtoret Elohei Tzidonim v'acharei milkom shikutz amonim. So he goes after these forms of idolatry. Vayas Shlomo hara b'inei Adonai. And Shlomo does what's wrong in the eyes of Hashem. V'lo milei acharei Adonai k'David aviv. And he didn't follow Hashem the same way that David followed him. Az yivne Shlomo bama lichmosh shikutz Moab bahar asher al pnei Yerushalayim ulemolech shikutz b'nei Amon. Shlomo HaMelech is now the one who's making idolatry. V'chein asa lechol nashav anachriot. And he's, you know, it's like a idolatrous party here. All of his wives, each one has their different god, each one has their different form of idolatry, and Shlomo HaMelech is accommodating all of them. Mak tirot umizabchot leilohem. And again, everyone according to their own wishes, he's making forms of idolatry for them. Okay? So, if you thought you had questions based on the first pasuk, it went from bad to worse. Because what started off, what started off as him loving lots of women, all of a sudden now, he's serving idolatry. So how do you understand all of this? Okay? Well, so again, one suggestion is, and this is based on the Gemara, and that is that Shlomo HaMelech never served idolatry. To suggest that would be heretical. What it means is that Shlomo HaMelech didn't stop his wives from serving idolatry. Says the Malbim, right? Vehu lo micha bidehem. Micha from the language of protest. He didn't protest against that which they were doing. And therefore, because he didn't protest against that which they were doing, the Torah attributes it as if he himself did it. Now, that in and of itself is an amazing idea. It means when you see injustice or when you see someone going against the way of Hashem and you fail to protest what they're doing, the Torah, so to speak, holds you accountable for it on a certain level. And so again, the Meforshim point out, some of the Meforshim point out, is, right, the Radak says, that you can't suggest, right, lo yaso vel nashav laso zeh avon eniflav, shehu elim einav minashav, vihi nicham laavod Elohim. He turned a blind eye. He said, you know what? I like having you around. You're good company. So, you do, don't ask, don't tell. I'm not going to ask what you're doing on the side. You're not going to tell. And even when Shlomo really knew, he turned a blind eye. Okay? So again, so while the Tanakh says that he was active in building it, many of the Meforshim and the Gemaras suggest that you can't say that Shlomo actually built idols. I understand that's what the text says. But what they're pointing out is something dramatic, which is that when you allow something to happen, It's as if you yourself do it. I'll read you the line of Mitzudas David. Mitzudas David says, Az Yivne, Rotze Lomar, that is to say, Kasher Hiniach Linashav, when he allowed his wives to do this, Az Nechshav Lo Ki'iluhu Bane. It's considered as if he himself did it. I'll give an example. Right? If my child does something at a young age, when they're under my control and under my authority, and I know it's happening, and I allow it to happen. So you might come to me and you'll say, you're promoting this to happen. I'll say, I'm not promoting it. I don't even, right? My son or child does it. I'm not promoting it. You would say to me, no. The fact that you know it's going on, it's under your roof. So it's you have the ability to control it, and you're choosing not to, you're complicit in it. You're the enabler, exactly. Yeah. There is. We're going to get to that in a second. Okay? So suggestion number one is you can't say Shlomo Melech sinned. It's inconceivable. The Gemara says, anyone who says it's heretical to suggest Shlomo Melech sinned. So it must be that he turned that blind eye. Option number two is to suggest that this is all one big... And by the way, each one of these options we're going to suggest has a major, what we call in Hebrew, Musar Haskil, a major important life lesson for us. Right? According to the first approach, it means that it's not enough just to say, I didn't do it. But if you see it being done and you don't protest it, right? This our social action committee exists for this very reason. You can't just sit idly by, right? History judges those who are quiet just as it judges those who are actually perform the action, okay? That's number one. Number two is to suggest that this is all one gigantic slippery slope. Could you say Shlomo Melech was a... Can't say Shlomo Melech was a bad person. Right, we know Shlomo Melech was one of the greatest individuals, one of the greatest figures in all of Jewish history. He loved Hashem. He built the Beis HaMikdash. Remember, Hashem gave him prophecy. Hashem imbued him with wisdom. Right, all up until now, it's all been hunky-dory. So how did we get to this point? The answer is that what started off as a very spiritual endeavor with Hashem at the helm quickly took on a life of its own. Remember, up until now, we've been talking a lot about the grandeur and the splendor and the Beis HaMikdash, and which direction is it going to go? So the answer is that something can be good, but also then take on a life of its own. And that's what exactly happens here. Shlomo Melech married the daughter of Paro. For halachic reasons, she converted, not converted, right, an alignment, whatever, an alliance with Egypt, whatever it was, probably wasn't bad at that point. But over time, it kind of spreads until it becomes something very dangerous. Shlomo Melech having lots of wives. Dangerous or not dangerous? Well, so we know that there's a prohibition in the Torah, right? That a king can't have a lot of wives. Shlomo Melech takes on a lot of wives. Should that have been the reason for why his kingdom was ripped away from him, as we'll see in a second? Probably not. But the answer is things exist in a slippery slope. It's one of the things we're going to talk about tonight. Okay. One of the things we're going to talk about tonight with Rav Zonenfeld's opposition to many of Rav Kook's policies was he felt this principle of slippery slope, that once you give an inch, the person wants a mile. And before you know it, it's an inch, it's an inch, it's an inch, an inch, an inch. And before you know it, you've given away the whole kitchen sink. Okay? So that's the second approach. Is to say this was a slippery slope. How do we know this? Well, the Gemara tells us, and I'm sorry, it's freezing in here, but if I turn off our recorder, then I lose the recording to be able to turn back on my Wi-Fi to change the AC. So, if you tell Linda to raise the... Okay? So, if you have... What's the proof that this is a slippery slope? The proof is the Gemara. The Gemara tells us, and this is an oftentimes quoted Gemara when we talk about Tamei HaMitzvos, the reason for mitzvos. And the Gemara says, why didn't Hashem give us more of the reasons for the mitzvah? So it would have made Judaism a lot easier to know why I'm doing what I'm doing. So the Gemara says that the psukim give us, there are two mitzvahs that the psukim give us the reasons for why we do what we do. In both of them, Shlomo HaMelech thought it didn't apply to him. Number one is the Torah says you shouldn't have too many horses. Number two is the Torah says you shouldn't have too many wives. In both times, the Torah says it's because you're going to get a little It's going to get to your head a little bit. It's going to take you off the path. Gemara says, Shlomo Melech saw this and said, I'm better than that. I'm wiser than that. Right? That doesn't apply to me. Right? It's like you're sitting, finish the drasha. Everyone comes over, Rabbi. That was an amazing, my neighbor really needed to hear that drasha, right? In other words, it's always for the other guy, it never applies to me. So when the Torah tells me not to have too many wives, that applies to Rabbi Goldberg, but Rabbi Moskowitz, I can have as many wives as I want. Okay? So Shlomo HaMelech didn't specifically choose to go down this path. He just thought he was better than that. But again, that slippery slope, it hammers away and hammers away until before you know it, it gets totally out of control. The third option is to look at Bat Paro, which again, Bat Paro at the beginning was not anything necessarily wrong with it, right? But all of a sudden, if you remember the Midrashim that we quoted in the third chapter about what happened the morning after the dedication of the Beis HaMikdash, anyone remember those? He didn't get up for Shacharis. He drank too much wine, right? Again, it's that, it like chips away at you, and it's that slippery slope. So again, you can choose whichever option you want. But clearly, Chazal are trying to protect Shlomo. And not saying that Shlomo is a bad person. It means that Shlomo was, in many ways, like you and I. Either you suggest the slippery slope theory, which very much applies to us, right? I see it all the time. People become more lenient in one area of Jewish law, and before you know it, you know, 15 years down the line, they've given up a lot more, okay? Or to suggest that Shlomo didn't sin, he just tolerated sin. And again, that also would present a whole slew of problems for us. Yeah.
Even with Israel, you can try to redirect them, but they still could be strong-headed and not make the right decision or comply with what you
want. Right. Well, the answer, it's a good point. The answer is that, first of all, you know, and this is a point of Jewish history, is that we've always done, in a counterintuitive way, we've actually thrived a lot more under oppression than we have under successful times, right? I mean, the greatest times of Jewish scholarship all happened under immense amounts of oppression. Rabbeinu Tam, when you think about when the Baalei HaTosafot, when they wrote the glossary on the Talmud, they were writing it as they were running from crusaders, right? So We've oftentimes done, I mean, it's sick to say, but we've oftentimes done better with our backs against the wall. You know, you think about contemporary Judaism in America, and while parts of Judaism in America are thriving to the levels that we've never seen in Jewish history, with so many people learning in yeshivas and the number of yeshivas, the majority of Jews, when for the first time in Jewish history were given the option to be Jewish, are choosing not to be, or choosing not to be at the extent that we would want them to be, right? So, Shlomo HaMelech, you got to put yourself in that time period. This was a great time in Jewish history, where there was abundance, there was bounty, there was the Beis HaMikdash. Everything was clicking on all cylinders, and there's a danger in that, which is that you don't. There isn't necessarily that built-in introspection, which you sometimes have when things aren't going as well, right? Think about it in your own life. It's unfortunately a lot harder to daven when everything is going well. Yeah, we talk about gratitude and thanking Hashem, but I'll put it to you this way. The person who has a relative that's sick, 9 out of 10 times, unfortunately, is going to daven with a lot more intensity and kavana than the person that's everyone's going well. All of a sudden you find God when there's a diagnosis, right? Again, that's what's happening here. Again, right? People are living under great circumstances. They're living in a blessed society. And it's very hard to all of a sudden just check yourself. There isn't that system of checks and balances. Okay? So nonetheless, whatever suggestion you want, that he loved women, non-Jewish women, the whole trifecta of idolatry, he tolerated idolatry, things go bad very quickly. Yeah. Yeah. That's what makes it so challenging. It shows that even the wisest of people can be taken off the path. Again, if there isn't that system of checks and balances. You don't see, someone made this point, Sari made this point earlier. You don't see, at any point, a religious figure kind of checking him.
Not yet, no.
Well, no one's going to check it. It's just going to be ripped away from him.
Like,
so again, you don't know whether that existed and he didn't listen, whether that didn't exist. It's hard to read between the lines. All we have is what Chazal tell us. And Chazal clearly describe a situation where it veered off the path at some point. As you know, and again, it gives us reasons for why it happened. We have to figure out why, how, what's the cause and effect, right? How A led to B. We know there were women. We know there were horses. All of a sudden, we see idolatry. And it's for us to read in for how that got from point A to point B. Okay? Pasuk Tes. Vayis anaf Adonai bishlomo. As any of us could predict, Hashem becomes very upset with Shlomo. Ki nata levavo me'im Adonai Elohei Yisrael, because he turned his heart from Hashem, hanirah elav pamayim. Right? God who revealed himself twice to Shlomo, and Shlomo, it meant nothing to him. By the way, who's this sound very much like? Jewish people. Right? Think about, we were at Kriyas Yam Suf, we saw the 10 plagues, and all of a sudden we're doing Chet HaEgel. Right? Again, we've seen that, we've been down this road before, that even though Hashem can perform amazing miracles one second, the next second we're off the path. He didn't listen to what Hashem said, not to follow other gods. He didn't guard the commandments of Hashem. Hashem said to Shlomo, because you didn't listen to me, karoa ekra es hamamlacha me'alecha unisati ala v'decha. I'm going to tear the kingdom away from you, and I'm going to give it to your servants. What imagery does this conjure up for us?
Shaul
HaMelech. Right? Shaul HaMelech, of course, what gets torn? His garment, right? But it's done through the garment. Remember, his cloak is torn, and that's how they know that the Melucha, that the kingdom is going to be taken away from him. Okay? Ach b'yamecha lo asena pasuk yibet, but I'm not going to do it in your lifetime. Laman David avicha miyad bincha krena. I'm not going to tear it away from you. I'm going to wait till you die, but I'm going to tear it away from your children. Rak es kol hamamlacha lo akra. I'm not going to do all of it. Shevet echad etain livnecha laman David avdi laman Yerushalayim asher bacharti. I'm not going to go all out. Right, when Shaul, when it's torn away from Shaul, is it you go halfway or all in? All in. Shlomo Melech, Hashem says, I'm only going to go partially in. I'm going to leave you a little bit. Why? Not because you're deserving, but because of David and Yerushalayim. I made promises to both, Hashem says. Right? Says the Radak, Rotzalomer, Kimim Nation, Nivchar Yerushalayim Lenetzach, Leo Bo Beis HaMikdash, because Yerushalayim is the eternal capital of the Jewish people, and where the Beis HaMikdash is going to be rebuilt. In order to keep continuity, so I always want some of my malchus, some representative of Malchut Beit David, to have control over Yerushalayim. But okay, that's part two. So part one was Shlomo's sin. Part two was Hashem telling Shlomo, very tragically, it's getting taken away. Part three now. Vayakem Adonai Satan l'Shlomo. Cut, pause. Hashem creates a Satan. What's a Satan? Right, we would translate it as a Satan. It's an enemy. It's like a threat. Okay, now, Vayakem Hashem Satan l'Shlomo. So you're wondering, was he there the whole time? Did he just not do anything? Don't forget, we're 20-some-odd years into Shlomo's reign. More. So, did these guys not exist? Were they lying dormant and all of a sudden they see an opening? Right? How exactly do they come to be? So we'll have to explore that. Vayakam anai satan l'shlomo et hadad ha-domi mizera ha-melech hu be'adom. So, this guy Hadad, who's from Edom, okay? Vayhi biyot David et Edom, Baalot, Yoav, Sarah, Tzavala, Kabela, Techalim, Vayach, Kol Zachar, Be'edom. David HaMelech, in a battle, killed all of Edom. Kisheshes Chadashim, Yashav, Sham, Yoav, V'chol Yisrael, Ad Hichri, Kol Zachar, Be'edom. Vayivrach Adad, Huv, Anashim, Adomim, Me'avdei Aviv, Ito, Lavo, Mitzrayim, Ve'hadad, Nar Katan. So as David HaMelech is massacring Edom, Hadad, who's a very small child, he escapes to Mitzrayim, right? What are the political? He's in exile, right? He's a what? A political refugee, exactly. Vayakumu miMidyan, vayavo Paran, vayikhu anashim imam miParan, vayavo Mitzrayim el Paro melech Mitzrayim veiton lo bayit balechem amar lo veeretz natan lo. So he's taking refuge in Mitzrayim. Vayimtza Hadad chen beinei Paro meod. Vayiten lo isha et achot ishto achot tach peneim hagvira v'teil lo achot tach peneim, right, dot dot dot. Again, it's describing for us Hadad. Pasuk Chaf Aleph 21. V'Hadad shama b'Mitzrayim ki shachav David avotav v'chi met Yoav ben Tzara Tzava. So Hadad hears that David HaMelech is gone. Don't forget, he's scared of David because David and Yoav massacred his people. But now they hear that they're dead. Vayomer Hadad al Paro, shalcheni ve'elecha el arzi. I'm ready. Right, law of return. Right of return. I want to go back. Vayomer lo Paro, ki ma ta chaser imi v'incha mevakesh lecha d'arzecha. Vayomer lo ki shalech shalcheni. Right. What is something wrong with Egypt? He goes, no, I just want to go back to my land. Okay. So that's number one. That's Hadad. Number two. Vayakam Elokim lo Satan et Rizon ben Eliyad asher barach meit. Hadid Ezer Melech Tzova Adonav Vayikvot Alav Anashim. Again, similar situation. Pasuk Chafei Vayis Atan Yisrael Kol Yimei Shlomo Ve'et Ha'ra'a Shir Hadad Vayakatz B'Yisrael Vayimloch Al Aram. So these were a Satan Kol Yimei Shlomo. That's a little bizarre language, right? Why? We don't hear about it. Right? The whole building of the Beis HaMikdash, the building of his palace, do we hear about these political threats? Right. We don't hear about it at all. So the Radak writes that, no, that's not really what it means. Right? It means that when Shlomo got older, okay, I'm just looking for the line. Right. The Radak writes that this was only in Shlomo's later years. The problem is that that's not what the Pasuk says. The Pasuk says, Kol Yimei Shlomo. Right? So again, it's unclear. The Abarbanel writes, by the way, this Amida Keneged Mida, that because Shlomo tolerated idolatry, so Hashem all of a sudden says, I'm going to tolerate your aggressors. And as you almost get the impression that they were always there, but now they become, like, they see an opening, or Hashem allows them, right? Like, Hashem always has, there are always figures that could cause trouble. Just Hashem successfully suppresses them until we sin, in which case he releases that suppression and they can come forth, right? This is how we believe the world works, right? There are nations in the world. Hashem can use them to help us or to hurt us. This is all of Tanakh, okay? So these people were there. They would mumble at their Shabbos table every now and then, but, you know, they lay low. And all of a sudden, Hashem gave them the ability to sprout forth and to cause a lot of trouble. That's figure number two. Figure number three, and this is the big figure. V'yeravam ben Nevat, Efrati min Hatsreda, v'shem imo Tsruya, Isha almana eved l'shlomo, v'yarem yad b'melech. Now we have this third guy, who's called Yeravam ben Nevat. And what does he do? Vayarem yad b'melech. What does that mean? He raised his hand. Says the Rashi, Hochichu barabim. He rebuked him. Right? As the rabbi referenced a couple minutes ago, we were in Cuba yesterday. You don't do that. And you get killed. Right? We drove by the intelligence buildings where you're not even allowed to stop, right? You raise your hand against the king, you're going to be in trouble. Okay? You're right. So what did he do? What was he so upset? And by the way, unfortunately, point out, this wasn't like an op-ed in the New York Times. I mean, he really created like a hullabaloo, okay? V'zeh davar asher heirim yad b'melech. What was he so upset about? Shlomo bana et hamilo sagar et peretz ir David aviv. Shlomo built the Milo, and he closed off the peretz. What's a peretz? An opening in Ir David. So what's Milo? So we're going to have to see. That's obviously a million-dollar question. Okay, should we answer that now or at the end of the chapter? Let's answer that now. So what was the Milo? So first of all, who is Yerava? Who is Yerava? Well, you know, let's read a couple more psukim. Sorry. Vayish Yeravam gibur chayil. So he was very strong. Vayar Shlomo etanar ki osem alachahu. Shlomo saw that he was a diligent worker. Vayavkeid oto lechol sevel beit Yosef. And he put him as the tax collector over beit Yosef. Vayhi. So parenthetically, the Meforshim point out, the chronology of the psukim are probably out of order. That Pasuk Chavchet, 28, should have been first. At first we're introduced to Yeravam. He was put over as a tax collector. And then, as the tax collector, he obviously saw something that caused him to want to raise his hand against the king. What would a tax collector see that would cause him to raise his hand against the king? What would cause a tax collector to rebel against the king? Either he's misusing the funds, or, as we'll see, that he sensed that, right, think about no taxation without representation, right? How did we become a country? It was because we felt we were being overburdened by taxes. Okay, so a tax collector sees firsthand the oppression that taxes can cause, the burden that taxes can cause on individuals. So he's the tax collector. He raised his hand about Milo. We still have to see what Milo is. Pasuk Chav Tes 29. Vayhi ba'isai ve'yiravim yatzam Yerushalayim. Oh, so let's stop there. Okay? So what did he see that makes him so upset? So first of all, the Gemaras are very torn about Yeravam. Based on what we were just told, Yeravam, good guy, bad guy? What leads you to believe he starts off as a good guy? Is rebelling at Shlomo a good thing or a bad thing? So you think he's trying to do what's right, okay? What else leads you to believe he's a good person? We haven't read it yet, but I'll foreshadow. He's the one who receives the prophecy that he's going to be the king who's going to tear apart the kingdom. So on the one hand, you have a Gemara that says, Gemara at the beginning of Perek Chelek, that there are three kings that have no Chelek in the world to come, no portion of the world to come. Menashe, we know is one of the worst, Achav, and Yeravam. So on the one hand, very bad guy. On the other hand, you have another Gemara in Sanhedrin, which says, why did Yeravam deserve to become the king? It's because he raised his voice against Shlomo HaMelech, right? Because he denounced Shlomo. So you're kind of ambivalent about, is he a good guy or a bad guy? Okay?
Did he raise his voice before the Nevuah, or again, because the Nevuah will be out of order?
Unclear.
All
we say, v'zeh davar asher heirim, pasuk 27, that this is what he raises hand against. Shlomo bana et hamilo, sagar et peretz ir David aviv. That he, Shlomo built the Milo, sounds like a nice hotel, I don't know. And we're going to get to what it is, hold on. And he closed up a peretz, ufartzu chomos migdalai, we said on Hanukkah, and breached, right? He closed up a breach in ir David. So what is going on? So first of all, the way we know that the Jewish people were, that the people were feeling oppressed by the taxes, is Pasuk Dalet in chapter 12, which you don't have. But I'll read to you. Yeravam comes to Shlomo and says, Avicha hiksha es ulenu. That your father placed a burden on us. Ve'ata, you, ata now, Hakel me'avodat avicha hakasham u'me'ilo akabeda shenatana aleinu v'navducha. Right? Can you lessen the burden a little bit? So it's clear that there was this burden being placed on the people. Right? So now we got to figure out what exactly is he protesting. What's this Milo? What's the parrot? So the Milo is, again, you don't have it, but for those who have a Tanakh, chapter 9, verse 24, I'll read you the pasuk. Okay. Ach bat paro, al ta meir David, el beta asher banalo. So bat paro goes to her house, az bana et hamilo. The Milo was the house that was occupied by Bat Paro. Okay? So he's protesting against an area that was designated as a place for the daughter of Paro. Clearly, something about that house or them paying taxes, right? Don't forget, it makes sure to mention that he was a tax collector. So the tax collector is bothered by a building project that was geared for Bat Paro. He obviously felt that it was unnecessary. It was an unnecessary building process. So what was the Milo? So Radak quotes a number of approaches. Number one I'll read you is from the Gemara. He says, Mibnei ma zacha yiravam l'malchus, mibno she'ochichu ha-shlomo. Again, we just read that. It's because he rebuked Shlomo. Mibnei ma nenash. Why is Yeravim ultimately punished? Because he rebuked him in public. In other words, Hashem wanted him to rebuke him, just not in public. We know that we have a concept of Morad B'Malchus is put to death. You can't rebel against the king. It undermines the entire integrity of everything that exists. Amr lo David Avicha, parot peretz pratzot b'choma, kedei sheyalu Yisrael l'regel. David HaMelech created pratsim. David HaMelech created holes in the walls kedei sheyalu Yisrael l'regel, so that the Jewish people can come. Ve'ata gadarta osam kedei la'asos angeria l'bat paro. In other words, David, your father, was very nice. When people, again, it's hard for us to even fathom the magnitude and the numbers of being Ola L'Regel. But picture the longest line you've ever waited on. The busiest place you have ever gone. And multiply that by 10 probably. Okay? So you have millions of people, hundreds of thousands of people coming to Yerushalayim, and you have a wall around Yerushalayim. And you have a couple of openings, one or two openings in those walls. It's going to create a lot of traffic and backlog. Okay? This is without having to search bags back then, right? Right, we were stuck in the terminal at the Cuban airport because they were afraid we were bringing in contraband, right? So, for an hour. So you can imagine what the line was like to get into Yerushalayim. So David HaMelech sensed this. So he made holes in the walls. What was the point of these holes? It was to give access, to allow the people access to Yerushalayim. All of a sudden, Shlomo HaMelech cuts that off. Because when he builds Milo, right, again, picture, imagine you have a beautiful view. You live in Thornhill, you live in Boca Hamlet. And your back, anyone Boca Hamlet here? And your backyard looks over the Boca Point golf course. And you have a gorgeous view. And all of a sudden, the Boca Del Mar Association decides that they want to build a large brick wall there. And they, right? So you're going to say, what? Right? I had access to, right? I had a beautiful wall. And all of a sudden, now I don't have access to it. Okay? So that's basically what he's doing. He's building a hotel right in those entrances. Not a hotel. He's building a house for Bat Paro, and the people can't get in. That's number one. Number two is the Marikra writes that this is the place where they used to gather for spiritual purposes, right? They used to have their like spiritual pep rallies in this Milo. And all of a sudden, Shlomo Melech is coming and closing it up. Number three is the Rabag. The Rabag suggests, what's the Milo? He says, Ve'od asar davar maguna. Shlomo Melech did something wrong. Achar sagaret peretz David aviv. By closing up the entrances of David. Shahayasham makom, what was there? It was a place Haita choma bo prutza, where the wall was breached, kidei sheyuchlu Yisrael lavo el hamelech, kesheyirtu lahagish lefanav divrei ribosehem. That when people wanted to complain, Shlomo HaMelech, or David HaMelech, built gaps in the walls to give people access to the throne when they wanted to come and complain. Okay? Which is a beautiful idea, right? It's the equivalent of, I don't know if you remember, when President Obama, it didn't necessarily work out this way, but when President Obama first became president, remember he started that if you get 10,000 signatures on a specific item, he'll make sure someone in his administration looks into the item. Now, they couldn't do it because people were signing petitions for absurdity and eventually had to drop it, but it was to give accessibility, right? This was to make people feel that Shlomo HaMelech wasn't the king in the ivory tower, but he was the king that wanted to hear from them. And that if they had a complaint, they had an address for where to come. It was symbolic of accessibility. So again, you have three options. The two that I like are all about accessibility. Either accessibility to Yerushalayim, accessibility to the king. And all of a sudden, this gathering place that's for the masses is all of a sudden closed up for a house of not just anyone, but for a foreign queen. Right? And something about that obviously irked the people a lot. You're taking away my, right? Don't forget, it's not your land, it's our, right? It belongs to the people, right? You're taking away our land, our accessibility to Yerushalayim, to you as our king, and you're giving it to a foreign queen with our tax dollars, right? Doesn't smell right. And so that is what Yeravim is protesting against. Again, that's why it sets it up that he's the tax collector. It wasn't just, don't forget, there had been lots of buildings. Hill's Palace, the Beis Hamikdash. Oh, you almost get the feeling that people are okay with that. But this was the straw that broke the camel's back. This one construction project led them to say, we can't take it anymore. And that's what Yeravim gets up and protests against. Okay? Pasuk Chaftes, 29. Vayihi Beis Ahi Yeravim Yatzam Yerushalayim Vayimsa'u So Achia HaShiloni Anavi. So Yeravim goes out from Yerushalayim, he meets Achia, v'hu mitkaseh b'salma chadasha u'shnehem levadam basadeh. Two alone in the field, he's wearing a, what's a salma? Salma. It's some form of a, like a garment, right? Do you notice anything interesting about the word salma?
Shlomo.
The same letters as the word Shlomo. Right, that this garment that's going to be torn is obviously symbolic of Shlomo and his kingdom being torn. Okay, because again, we have different words for garments had we wanted to use it. Vayitpos achia b'salma chadasha asher alav. He rips this, or he takes this new garment. Vayikra'eh shnei masar kra'im. He tears into 12 pieces. Vayomer li Yeravim kach lecha asarah kra'im. You take 10 of them. Ki cho amar adonai Elohei Yisrael hineni koreas amamlecha miyad Shlomo v'nasati lecha es asarah shvatim. Right, I'm giving you these 10. Ve'ashevet ha'achad yelo, one shevet will remain his. Laman avdi avi David, ulaman Yishlaim ha'ir asher b'charti bo mikol shevtei Yisrael. Again, it reiterates. Hashem says, I'm not doing this because of Shlomo. I'm doing this because I have other promises I got to take care of. Yana shir azavuni, because he left, abandoned me. Va'yishtachavu la'ashtaros Elohim. Right, and he bowed down to all these idols. Right, la medal velo akach es kol amalcha miyado. I'm not going to take it from him because I promised him that he'd be a king all his life. But pasuk 20:35, v'lakachti amalcha miyad bino unisatia lecha eight aser dashratim. I'm going to take it from the next generation, from his children, and I'm going to give you 10 of them. V'livno etain shevet achad leman hayos near li David avdi kol yamim lifanai biyushalayim ha'ir asher b'charti li. Lasum Shmi Sham. Again, I'm going to keep one for him. Ve'oscha, and for you, 37. Ekach, you should take it. Umachalt, umalacht, umalachta bechol asher ta'aven nafshecha. Go as you wish, rule it as you wish. Ve'hayisa melech al Yisrael. Such, those words should make you, give you chills. You, Yeravim, you are going to be the melech al Yisrael. V'ayayim tishma et kol asher atzaveh. If you listen to what I say, ve'alachta b'drachai ve'asita yeshar be'enai, right, Hashem's like, it couldn't work with Shlomo, maybe you'll try. If you follow my ways, ve'ayisi imach uvanisi lecha bay neman kashir banisi ledavid v'nesati lecha Israel, then I'll, if you're true to me, then I'll be true to you. Va'ane et zera David leman zos ach lo kol hayamim va'yivakesh Shlomo so fine, right, that's the end of the prophecy. Pasuk Mem, Pasuk 40. Vayivakesh Shlomo la'amid et Yeravam. Shlomo tries to kill Yeravam. Right, as we say, there's no room for political dissidents. So Shlomo tries to kill Yeravam. Vayakam Yeravam v'yirach Mitzrayim el Shishak Melech Mitzrayim v'yi Mitzrayim ad mot Shlomo. He runs away. He goes into exile and he's waiting out until Shlomo dies. Vayeser divrei Shlomo v'chol asher asa v'chach maso. Everything else that Shlomo said and did, Halohim ksuvim al sefer divrei Shlomo, they're written down in divrei Shlomo, which again reminds us that what? That our Tanakh is not meant to be a historical work, right? It's a book of prophecy. And therefore the prophecy tells us, if you want the history of it, it's all written down somewhere else, but we only included here that which was necessary for nevuah, okay? V'hayamim asher malach Shlomo b'Yushalayim al kol Yisrael arba'im shana. Shlomo ruled for 40 years. Vayishkav Shlomo im avosav. Shlomo melech dies. Vayikaver be'ir David aviv. Vayimloch Rechavam bino tachtav. And Rechavam, his son, rules after him. Well, again, we knew from Hadad already that that was a place where they were waiting it out. That's where the place where the dissidents were waiting. Again, it's a. If I plopped you down in a vacuum to this class, you would say, okay, there was this guy named Shlomo, he made a mistake, and he gets punished for it. What makes this such a staggering parak is how rapid the decline is. Right? 10 chapters we build up. Build the Beis HaMikdash, wisdom, relationship with Hashem, and all of a sudden, in a matter of a few psukim, it is all ripped away from him, and again, it's like so sudden, it's almost anticlimactic at the end. Oh, and Shlomo, right? Anything else you want to know about him is irrelevant. Read it somewhere else, and he dies. Yeah.
This great man just said it was 40 years. It didn't start right away. Things were great, and he did everything.
No, I understand. I'm saying, but the way the Navi depicts the decline, the way the Navi depicts the decline, because we've been studying it now for a number of weeks, in this like. Again, think about where we were 2 weeks ago on Hanukkah. We were reading about the Chanukah, HaMikdash. There was euphoria and excitement. And all of a sudden now, it's like, yeah, Shlomo's written off. It's hard to... No, no, I understand. It was a process. That's what we were talking about, the slippery slope. I'm sharing with you the way the Navi depicts the decline is what makes it so striking. And again, as opposed to the previous weeks where we ended on such a high and so excited about the Beis HaMikdash and the relationship with Hashem and Tefillah, this week unfortunately has somewhat of a sad ending, and it goes from bad to worse over the next couple of weeks because of what Yeravam is able to accomplish.
So we asked the question, Rabbi, in the beginning, how should we judge Shlomo? So I want to hear what you would say.
I'm going to turn off the recorder for this.